I want to put my head through a wall based on what the Browns and the decisions they make. It'll be good to talk about the Cavs with Greg. Greg's always a pleasure, and so are the 6-4 now Cavs. Do they get another win in there? I don't know.
Isn't it nice? Like, I feel like we always just have that one team here where it's like, you know, sometimes it's usually the Guardians, like it has been since like the 90s, but like the Cavs every once in, like, they'll have like a 5-year run where it's like, oh, they're so good. And then like football season hits, and everyone's sad. And little hope, but never enough. But the Cavs, that bright, shiny spot here in Cleveland.
It's like, okay, hold on. Wait, 820, I can get Cavs, 840, I can get, all right, good vibes being sent. And by the way, social media, where you can get to me on X, Volnick Jake, V-U-L-I-N-E-C, Jake. C-Belk's chiming in. Positive vibes on a Friday is what he's sending over. OSU plays in a huge game, and the Cavs are rolling. Exhausting to talk about the football team in town when they can't get out of their own way. I agree. It's a tough sell, right? It's a very hard thing to do right now when the Browns are 3-12 and they continue to just essentially provide you with news that makes me angry. I honestly would love to talk about Ohio State and love to talk about the Cavs here for 4 hours. Just not how it works. The Browns don't get to make moves on Deshaun Watson and setting up their future for next year, and we don't talk about it. Speaking of, though, love to hear from you guys as well. 216-474-0092. The idea that Miles isn't out of the way, and just the entire Deshaun conversation, the restructuring as a whole. Like, I need to know what the overall consensus and everybody's feeling is so far. I would say to this point, a lot more people in my boat. Just, I don't know how much of a Brown side you can even take to this, other than the fact of, well, they're restructuring it and they want to set things up for later, to the point where they don't just get put down in the dumpster in 2027. It's the only sell from this thing, and that doesn't do a whole lot for me. Let's go back out to the phones, though. Walter's in Cleveland. Walter, what's going on?
Hey, I believe it was Stefanski's call to get rid of Baker Mayfield, 100%.
I think Stefanski's somewhere in that conversation, but I don't think it's 100% Stefanski. I honestly think it probably boils down more to the Browns were in a spot where, is Kevin Stefanski, is Baker his guy? Probably not. But also, did you want to hand Baker, did you want to hand him a $40 million contract?
It was, Stefanski was new. He didn't pick Baker Mayfield. Whether it was a personality conflict, a scheme conflict, or maybe Stefanski didn't think he had the talent, but he had a chance to let Mayfield run his career into the dirt, and it was an easy way out for him and to be able to go out and pick who he wanted. So I like Stefanski. I think he's done okay, but I believe Mayfield in Tampa Bay is Stefanski's fault.
Walter, appreciate the call. I don't know about all that. I mean, you could make the, yeah, it wasn't Kevin Stefanski's guy. It also wasn't Andrew Berry's guy. I mean, we can make that argument on the other side, too. If Jimmy Haslam wanted to pay Baker Mayfield and thought he was a franchise quarterback, at the end of the day, guys, the owner gets what he wants. Newsflash. I don't know if you've looked at Dallas in the last, I don't know, 30 years. Jerry Jones, what he wants, he gets. If Jimmy really wanted to pay Baker Mayfield and keep him here, Baker Mayfield would be in Cleveland still, and probably not the quarterback that he is in Tampa. Let's be just very realistic about things. I don't think that's any question mark, but to pin it all on Stefanski is wild to me. Absolutely not. If they wanted to pay him, I just don't think they wanted to hand Baker a $50 million contract. That's all it came down to. Todd is in Ward 1. Todd, what's going on?
I don't know, Jake. Jerry Jones been wanting the Super Bowl for 30 years. He ain't got that.
Well, listen, you got to put the results out there. I mean, Jerry's another guy who can't get out of his own way. But if he wants a decision made, he gets it. I just don't think he's got the power over Roger to be like, hey, can I at least, can you hand me a Lombardi? Does that work? Hey, can we do it that way? Or I don't actually have to have my team play in the playoffs?
Go home and hug Lombardi trophies you got, Jerry. So I'm not clear. Maybe you could bring clarity to it. It appears that the way the contract has been negotiated based on the limited information that was given to the public.
Right.
They get an additional year of service from him, assuming he's serviceable, and they don't have to pay him any more money than what they've already agreed to pay him, correct?
You basically get, so he'll be 2025, 2026 the same way, but you'll have the chance to essentially release him post June 1st, 2027, and all the money doesn't fall that year where you have to pay it then. It can be spread out through 27, 28, and I mean, probably further down the line if they decide to do that.
And it's the same amount of money, no nothing yes. more.
As of right now, that's the case, yeah.
And most likely, this has made some tax write-offs available to them, I'm sure. There's probably some tax write-offs built in for the ownership group, so I'm sure that's going to be beneficial to them as well. So it looks like the right thing to do, as long as you don't have to pay a penny more. I think the guy has basically been a problem because of injuries, and his injuries haven't been because he's foolishly playing or out on the streets acting stupid. He was just beat up before he got here. He wasn't able to recover. It might work out for everybody. So disaster sounds like too strong of a word to me. I've heard that word attached to him a lot. Banged up, that works. I think they did the right thing, man. I don't know what's going to happen with Miles, though, Jay. I think he's on his way out.
So, yeah. The interesting thing, Todd, that so I'm not smart enough to figure out any of this, but Spotrac is the guys over there, because that's what they do. Basically, what they're saying is that the Browns have set themselves up in a spot where if they convert his contract to a signing bonus over the next 2 years, that you lessen the cap hit that's going to be on them in 25-26, but also then extend the cap hit out through 2028, 2029, and potentially into 2030, depending on what they do. It is the most realistic possibility. I would consider Deshaun pretty close to a disaster, even when he was healthy and didn't get hurt. It still wasn't great. And part of your availability, or part of your ability, is availability. So it's a struggle, and I don't know that I see Deshaun coming back and making an impact. And I don't know that the contract here changes the mind, because if they were to do that, his base salary would basically be veteran minimum, like just a touch over $1 million.
I think it's a tax write-off that are going to be built in that you're not talking about. I really do. I mean, it is a business, and you know. But Miles, when Miles made that comment, every GM in the country was like, "What? What?" All right.
Hold on. Let me get on the phone. Let me fire something up here.
Straight up, man. Straight up. Yeah. All right, man. I'll talk to you later.
Appreciate it, Todd. Yeah, I'm not smart enough to figure out if it's a tax write-off or not. Maybe somebody else is. Maybe somebody can figure that one out. That is not in my brain. As a 23-year-old, tax write-offs are not my strong suit at the moment. So we'll maybe get there in life, honestly. Knowing myself, probably not. Probably not figure that one out entirely. I don't know, guys. So it all comes down to that idea. I think Jimmy Haslam also sort of sold you guys and sold all of us. Maybe successfully sold. He attempted to sell would probably be the correct way to phrase it. The idea that keeping Andrew Berry and keeping Kevin Stefanski and extending this off is an idea and a chance to keep some stability, to have actual structure here, give the longer leash, but that these guys have been good. They have provided you those two things. I just wonder how much of that's actually true. Right, like everything before this season, I think, pointed towards that idea that, yes, even when you've had some down years in terms of the Browns continuously making better decisions than they were making in the past, the Browns being competitive, in offense it seemed like it functioned, and you weren't switching out quarterbacks every 2 seconds, since the signing of Deshaun, you've also been switching out quarterbacks almost every 2 seconds, but like you weren't having to draft one every single year. It was more like Todd was just saying, a result of injuries, and combo that with bad play. I just wonder how much of it's true, because you look at this year then, a lot of you have pointed to the pre-snap penalties and whether or not Kevin can do that, but the bigger thing for me is guys wanting to play here. In this regime stance, how often have you heard it, even in the down years, where the Browns have missed the playoffs in the Kevin Stefanski tenure, you haven't heard Miles say anything like this. You haven't heard Joel Bitonio make the comments that he made yesterday, talking about the consideration of retiring. Denzel Ward making similar comments that Miles did. And then just look throughout the year. Amari Cooper had no desire to be here. And has said several times that it is basically a blessing that he's gone. That's a guy who had 1,000 yards receiving every year he was here. And sure, did his contract stuff maybe play into it? Yeah. But that's not a great sign. Za'Darius Smith seemed much happier once he became a Detroit Lion. Like, the guys who have left, while yes, on a struggling Browns team, a team who is not very successful, who, yeah, if I go play for a team that has a better record and I'm winning more games, I'm sure you're going to be a little happier. But it's not a good sign that guys are essentially wanting to be gone, not wanting to be here. And by getting out of Cleveland, they feel better about their careers, better about the situation they're in, just from simply leaving. The Browns have sold you on the idea that people want to play here. Players like being here because the Browns are in a good situation. I don't know that that's necessarily the case. It becomes a much harder sell based on everything that's happened this year and the decisions they've made in the past couple of years. I think the Browns are in a very dangerous spot where things are looking much, much worse than they have, I mean, just dating back to a year like last year. 216-474-0092. We got about a minute before we got to get out here. We're going to talk coming up in about 6 minutes to Greg Swartz. Let's go to Mike in Stowe. Mike, what's going on?
Hey, good evening. How you doing?
Not doing too bad. How about yourself?
Getting through this part of the evening where we commiserate on the status of our football team. So here's kind of where I'll give you it as quick as possible. So the whole Andrew Berry getting off scot-free and with all the decisions he's made since he's been here. I mean, since he's been here. It's just time to put that to a stop. This is pretty much a kick-in-the-can move. He's going to be kicking that salary down the road. Yeah, the salary cap's going to come up. People argue that's a great idea. No disrespect to the last caller. That's all this is. It's him kicking a bad decision down the road, probably for somebody else to inherit. Because I'll be honest with you, this guy, since he's been here, hasn't done the job. We all put him up on a pedestal because he had a war chest when he came here. Anybody could have took that. Any backyard football guy could have taken the draft capital and the salary cap space that he had and turned it into something. The problem is he didn't turn it into enough. And now we're going to have to re-roll this thing. And we're talking about three really good players, right? Our best three players, Joe Petonio, Miles Garrett, and Denzel Ward. They're making the most noise, and they've no disrespect. They've put in the most hard work, as far as I can see, for a long time. And now they're talking about problems. Well, they're the best three guys on his team, probably, and that guy didn't even draft them. He can't even draft good. So they better figure out, this is what I say they do. They better figure out, number one, what is the problem? Is it the players or is it the coaching staff? If it's the players that are bad, get rid of the GM. If he's the one that's making the decisions on the guys, if it's a 75% him making decisions, Kevin's getting a little bit of advice, get rid of the GM. If it's Kevin picking the players, get rid of them both. That's what I say. Have a good night.
Yeah, appreciate the call, Mike. I mean, hard to argue. It's a pretty negative way to end the segment, but it's how we've been feeling for the first hour and 20 minutes. Let's flip it around. Let's get positive. Greg Swartz, Bleacher Report. Let's talk the Cleveland Cavaliers. Guys, they're 26-4. Good news. You have something to be happy about. We'll talk to Greg next. Jake Falnick right here with you on Overtime on 92.3 The Fan.
Gotta make it happen. Come on, Cavs. Gotta make it happen with your fast break action. Gotta make it happen. Just
now, this is music, Jake Falnick. This is great.
Gotta make it happen. Come on, Cavs.
Did Jake not play this?
Huh?
During games?
That's great. Many guys here on Overtime on 92.3 The Fan. It's good vibes. We're talking Cavs. Now it's a good time. Put the show onto the side for a second and take in 26-4. And to do that, let's bring in someone else to help us bring in the good vibes. Let's go out to the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. He's Greg Swartz of Bleacher Report. And he joins us now. Greg, what's going on?
Not much. Happy holidays to you.
To you as well, yeah. Do you have a good holiday?
I did, yeah. We had a good time, and looking forward to New Year's already.
Yeah, it's New Year's is always a good one. To me, if we get a drinking holiday, it's a good holiday. I'm not a booze hound, but drinking holidays are good holidays.
There you go.
Cavs obviously getting ready to start a West Coast trip here. I'm not somebody who views a lot of NBA regular season games as measuring stick games. Could a trip out west where they play some really good teams, obviously Dallas in the mix, Denver, you actually get back and then end up playing OKC, but sort of an extension of that, is that as close as we can ever get in the NBA regular season to a measuring stick?
Yeah, it's the longest road trip that the Cavs have had all season at this point. Obviously, some of these locations that you play at, you know, Denver tonight with the elevation, it's one of the hardest places to play in the NBA. You know, you're taking a young team to Los Angeles. Obviously, there can be some distraction when you go out there. The Warriors are always a tough game to play at them. And then Dallas, the team that was just in the NBA Finals. It is a measuring stick, but to break these games down individually, Denver has struggled lately. This isn't the team that looks like a championship contender. I mean, they're barely breaking 500. Golden State, 3-7 in their last 10, really. I mean, they got blown out by the Memphis Grizzlies by 53 points the other night. Los Angeles, a team, again, that should strike fear into the hearts of no one. That's going to be, LeBron is officially going to be 40 when that game is played. And then you finish your road trip with Dallas. Luka Doncic just got ruled out for the next month plus with a calf strain. So if you break, you know, you look at them on the schedule, like, oh, those are some formidable opponents. But when you look at them on an individual basis, especially Denver, and then you get 2 days off, you have the Golden State Lakers game back-to-back, you get another couple of days off. It's a measuring stick, but the Cavs really should have the goal to go 4-0 on this road trip. There's no reason why they shouldn't.
Greg, you lay all those things out, and I know we've talked about this before when I've had you on, but like the Cavs have had what has been relatively an easier start to the season. This was one where I think a portion where people pointed to and thought, okay, here's going to be a real test. Now you talk about Denver struggling, the injuries on Dallas, the struggles of the Lakers. Is that just going to be a prolonged conversation essentially for the whole year that the Cavs never really get tested and it's just going to be in the postseason when we see what they, you know, quote unquote, actually have?
I mean, look, they can only play who they got on the schedule. Right. It's not their fault. The East is terrible. You know, when you've got Charlotte and Washington and Brooklyn on the schedule, and you can only do your best against them. These are not good teams. The East as a whole is not a good conference. So even when you go out West, like I said, these are some teams that on paper, I mean, you're playing the Warriors at the right time. The Warriors were the 1 or 2 seed in the East, basically to the beginning of December, and they've really fallen off lately. The Lakers had a good start to the season. Again, a team that's fallen off. Denver's a team that there's just very bad vibes around this team right now. And, you know, you've heard the Zach LaVine noise. Are they going to make a move there? I mean, they're considering reportedly some very big changes to this core that, like I said, it's only 2 years removed from winning a title, and then Dallas without one of the best players in the world. You could only play. The Cavs have been blessed with a good schedule. They had a lot of time off thanks to the NBA Cup. They're coming to this game tonight after 4 days off. They've had a great schedule. They've had, knock on wood, some good luck with injuries. But you can only play who you're going to play. And if the other teams are struggling, you can't have any mercy on them. You just got to do your best, even if the opponents aren't the strongest.
So looking back at the Cavs' last game, Sam Merrill makes a start, has a really good game, ends up dropping 20, hitting 6 threes. It points to the idea then that a lot of changes come for the Cavs at that 3 spot. It ended up being Sam in that game, and I know Max Strus is currently on a minutes restriction going in, at least in that game, and for a little bit here going forward. Is that something we should continue to see throughout the year, that this 3 spot is going to be a little mixy and that it never really gets solidified?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of been a revolving door. A lot of injuries. Dean Wade played well at the beginning of the year. Isaac Okoro obviously stepped into that spot and did really well. He's currently number 2 in the NBA in 3-point shooting, which, I mean, I don't think any of us would have imagined that coming into the season. And he's out now with an injury. You know, if there's good timing for an injury, this was it. With Max Strus coming back, obviously Sam Merrill, his best game of the year. Somebody who, you know, obviously shoots the ball really well but was struggling this year, and then just had a breakout game. So the Cavs have a lot of potential replacement pieces. I mean, the good news is when you have 4 potential all-stars around that small forward position, you can plug in you or me, and we could hit some open threes. So not super worried about it. Obviously, Max getting his minutes back up. I still believe that Max Strus is just a perfect fit for this system with Kenny Atkinson, with his ability to shoot, cut. You can run so many different actions for him. I think he's just going to be a perfect fit there. So the injury to Okoro sucks, but you have so many good pieces you can kind of plug in that the Cavs can keep their heads above water even with him out.
No doubt. I also wanted to get into you a little bit with the Christmas Day games. Obviously, the NFL sort of impedes this year, schedules a couple games of their own. The ratings officially came out for that. Self-reported by Netflix by the NFL, so I take it with a grain of salt. But is that sort of changing the symbolic start in the NBA to a degree where it's usually, okay, Christmas Day's here, the NBA's the only thing on, everybody sort of picks up on the storylines from the big games, and it sort of jump-starts the year for the NBA, for the casual fan? Do you think that changes this year? Is the NBA almost having to wait until the end of the NFL season for people to, I don't want to say care, but to really invest themselves?
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, the NBA is a great league. It's got a lot of good matchups. It's got a lot of superstars. They market very well. But at the end of the day, they're always going to be number two to the NFL in the United States. And that's okay. Like, if you're number two, you're still getting crazy good ratings. I mean, the Golden State Warriors, Los Angeles Lakers game with Steph and LeBron had almost 8 million viewers, is the highest rated Christmas Day game in 5 years. That's great. They did really well. You put those numbers next to, you know, some bad football games, they're still not going to compare because football will always be king. But yeah, that stinks for the NBA that they have to compete with the NFL on Christmas Day, because that's kind of their day. You know, we'll let the NFL have Thanksgiving, and we'll let the NFL have, you know, they have Black Friday now. There's games on there. So, but for Christmas, they put the juiciest matchups they can. Like I said, we saw Steph versus LeBron. We saw Victor Wembanyama in New York against the Knicks. That was a really good matchup. Obviously, he had a monster game. Ratings were very good, but head-to-head, just the NBA is never going to compete with the NFL. So that's bad news for basketball in general if they're going to put anybody, literally anybody, on the NFL, in a Christmas Day game for the NFL.
So I had two solutions that I brought up yesterday on the air that I think could help the NBA sort of get back their symbolic start. I want to know which one of these you would like better. It is the simplicity of the NBA takes over Christmas Eve, because Christmas Eve was a sports wasteland. We had just the Hawaii Bowl between USF and San Jose State. Not sure how many people were really dialing into college football that day for that one. Or you sort of condense the NBA Cup. You continue to play it sort of on these Tuesdays, Fridays. You might be able to add in a Wednesday, typically where the NFL isn't playing. But you condense it, you throw it at one part in the year, and you try to build off momentum where it almost feels cohesive, and it's not these spread out Tuesday, Friday, and then these long breaks in between.
Yeah, it's kind of been a funky schedule with the Cup. Like you said, it's just these random Tuesdays and Fridays. You kind of forget, oh, it's a Cup game. You know, you turn on the TV and you have these wacky courts and you're like, oh, yeah, this game means a little bit more. Or it's supposed to, at least for the casual fan, it probably still doesn't. So I like the idea of Christmas Eve, a day that a lot of families are probably at home. They're probably gathering. They probably want at least something to put on the TV in the background as they open presents. That would be a good idea, I think, to put a couple good NBA games on. And you have so many good teams. You know, you look at the Christmas Day schedule, you didn't have the two best teams in the NBA. You didn't have the Cleveland Cavaliers. You didn't have the Oklahoma City Thunder. Two teams that have star power, that have tremendous records, that have exciting young players, and teams that, you know, fan bases can grow, and casual fans can look at this team and be like, oh, this is someone I can watch for the next 5 years. So they have enough good teams, and they have enough good potential matchups that I'd like to see that spill into Christmas Eve. I think you're onto something there.
There we go. That's what I don't often get. I'm onto something. It's usually just me word vomiting into a microphone. So I'll take it. That is a big positive. Evan Mobley obviously taking a massive step up this year. Is there anything that you've seen out of Evan that maybe the casual fan doesn't see, just to quantify how big of a step he's taken? Like, can you quantify him as a number two on a title contending team? Has he hit that level, or is there something that he's doing you think that a lot of fans are missing?
Yeah, I think he's very close to a number two. I think that's important, because if you believe Donovan Mitchell is a number two or number one, then yeah, Evan Mobley is very close to number two. I mean, obviously the raw numbers are up. Everybody's going to point to the three-point shooting. He's up to 41.5%. He's making one a game now, which is huge. I mean, he never even hit half a three-pointer per game in his career. So the fact that he's doing it at a volume is really good. But I think one play that stood out to me recently, and it was in their last game against Utah, where he got the ball and he just went right at Walker Kessler and just slammed it on his head. Walker Kessler is probably not a household name. He's number two in the NBA in block shots. He is 7 foot tall. He's probably 260 pounds. Just a massive human being. I mean, if you put him muscle for muscle against Evan Mobley, Mobley on paper does not have a chance. One of the best rim protectors in the NBA. And just the fact that Mobley challenged him, even if he would have missed the dunk, I would have been impressed. I've been like, well, that's what we want to see. That's the aggressiveness that we want. That's the, you know, the grit that maybe we didn't see from him because he's so calm and he's so kind of passive and past. The fact that he went right at one of the best shot blockers in the NBA and dunked on his head, that for me just shows that he has the confidence now. He has the aggressiveness. And then you add in that three-point shot. I mean, Evan Mobley, in my book, 100% an all-star when you look at the offensive growth plus what he does on defense. I mean, there's an argument that he's been the second-best defensive player in the NBA this year, next to Victor Wembanyama in San Antonio. So, for me, just the aggressiveness, three-point shooting, you put all that together, boy, I'm excited about his future in the NBA and with the Cavs.
Greg Swartz of Bleacher Report with us here on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Greg, I got into it with Jonathan Peterlin on the afternoon show on Tuesday. I would consider this Cavs team already to be a title contender. He said he needs to see it against the Celtics and that he'd have to be confident they can beat them in a 7-game series, and that just doesn't get done in the NBA regular season. Do you quantify them as title contenders currently, and how much of a shot are you giving them in 7 games against Boston?
Look, Boston doesn't look too good right now. This is a team that they just lost 2 in a row. They've lost some bad games this season. They don't look like this juggernaut that, you know, kind of steamrolled through the NBA last year, won 64 games and won the Eastern Conference by 14 or whatever it was over the Knicks. So to answer your question, 100% the Cavs are a title contender. I think there's three teams in the East you could say that about. You could say about the Cavs, the Celtics, and I think the Knicks, if they're healthy and clicking, are probably a title team. They've won 5 in a row as well to kind of solidify themselves as a number three seed in the East. Absolutely. I mean, they're 26-4. They have the best offense in the NBA. They've mostly been healthy, but you factor in, okay, well, we haven't even had Max Strus. We barely had him back. Isaac Okoro is out now. We've missed, you know, a starter and some rotation players. And this is a young core that's only getting better. And they have 2 years of playoff experience now. They have a playoff series win under their belts. They have a head coach that obviously looks like he's one of the best in the NBA, obviously the leader for Coach of the Year in Kenny Atkinson, 100% in a 1-1 record against the Celtics this year. And they've beat some of the other top teams as well. So 100% the Cavs are a title contender. And I'd be disappointed if, you know, they fall short of the Eastern Conference Finals or even the NBA Finals this year.
What would you favor them in a series against the Celtics?
Well, as of right now, the Cavs would have home court advantage. If the Cavs had home court advantage, I would take the Cavs in that series. If somehow they slip and Boston retakes the one seed, then I would give the edge to Boston, just because both these teams obviously are really good at home. Cleveland, an NBA best 17-1 at Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse this year. And obviously Boston in the playoffs at the Boston Garden, that's a really tough place to play. So if the Cavs can hold on to that one seed, they're guaranteed not to play Boston until a conference finals. And if they can get to that, I just think there's the depth for the Cavs is a lot better than the Celtics. Obviously the Celtics have the edge in postseason experience. They shoot a lot more threes. The Cavs have been the more accurate team. Defensively, I'd go with Boston too, but I just think if the Cavs have home court advantage and each team is healthy, I would give the edge to Cleveland just if they have that home court advantage, because I think that'd be so important in a potential series against the Celtics.
On a day surrounded with a bunch of negativity, I'm glad you brought me some positivity, Greg. I appreciate you coming on as always, and look forward to talking soon, man.
All right. Thanks for having me on.
That was Greg Swartz of Bleacher Report, and he joined us on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Make sure you go check him out, read all of his stuff. When we come back, I want to hit on what we just asked him. The Cavs, title contenders already. Would you put him there, or do you have to wait and see until the postseason like JP. 216-474-0092. We'll do it on the other side. It's Jake Volnick right here with you guys. 92.3 The Fan. Mo, always for a new drop. So, it'll be fun. Just got done talking to Greg Swartz of Bleacher Report, though. Cavs obviously heading out west starting tonight against the Denver Nuggets. Two things that I found extremely interesting. I mean, Greg was great the whole interview, but two things that I found extremely interesting here to talk about. And the first one that I want to hit on is the Cavs' title contenders. JP and I spent 20 minutes talking about it on Tuesday. I just don't understand where JP comes from on it. He's like, no, they're not a title contender. I'm like, do you give them a shot to win against Boston? He's like, well, yeah, I wouldn't pick them to win, but you have to give them a shot. And he said like 20% chance, which I think is absurdly low. Now, I don't think Boston's quite the juggernaut that they were. I also just don't know how you look at a team that's 26-4. Sure, you can spew to me the NBA regular season doesn't matter. You can say whatever you want. 26-4 is a feat that most teams do not accomplish two, three decades, let alone it just being there in general and then trying to paint them not as a title contender. You have to take into some account the NBA regular season. And the NBA Cup is something that I use as sort of not a full measuring stick, but I think those games mean more. And sure, the Cavs lost to the Hawks in those as well. You can point to that. But the Celtics came into the game against the Cavs wanting to win, doing everything they could to win. It was said by the intensity in the game. You could say it was an NBA Cup game that mattered for both squads. It mattered. They wanted to end the Cavs' streak at the time. And, of course, succeeded in doing so. But that was a neck-and-neck game in which the Cavs were by far the worst team in the first quarter, a disastrous first quarter and first half, and then turned the game on its head and were right there neck-and-neck. I just don't know how you look at everything that this team's done this year and paint them as non-title contenders, nor do I see how you give them a 20-25% chance to beat the Celtics in a seven-game series. Greg said he's like, it's basically who has home court advantage. If the Cavs hold on to the one seed, I'd have them favored in the series. If they drop to the two seed, I'd give Boston the edge. Almost a coin flip. 50% chance. And if you have a direct competitor to the Celtics and feel like the Cavs can compete, that instantly makes them a title contender. To say you have to see it in the postseason, I don't know how you get there. If that's the case, the only thing that will ever convince you the Cavs are a title contender is to see them take down the Boston Celtics, which guys would put them in the NBA Finals. Assuming these two teams hold on to the 1 and 2 seeds, they would be in the NBA Finals if they beat the Boston Celtics. That's the only thing you can see. To make them a title contender, they have to get to the title. I don't see how that is the picture that you draw, and that's where you stand on the team. Like, yes, the postseason, to a degree, is a different beast in the NBA. You still have to learn from the regular season. You have to take things away the way that a team plays. And the Cavs are set up well for a postseason run. The only thing you can point to that you don't like from the Cavs play style is that they play 10, 11 deep. I don't know if you can make that work in a postseason and make it work as effectively as it has. But you have 10 or 11 guys that you trust to roll out there every single night, where you could just find the 8 guys who you rely on a little bit heavier. You might not get a 20-point game out of Sam Merrill every night. Caris LeVert might not look like an absolute all-star every single night. Isaac Okoro could have an all-star. I could go down the line, but the Cavs have enough bench depth and pieces that you get to that 8 guys for the night at some point. If one guy doesn't have it, you have the edge up on getting to go to another guy who you hope does. In a way that a lot of other NBA teams don't, in a way that the Boston Celtics don't have that flexibility. Sure, the star power is greater in Boston. The overall team composition, in terms of how deep it goes, is definitely better in Cleveland. I have this team right up there, neck and neck. I've said that about 4 times now, but I have them head-to-head with the Celtics on pace. 1,000% in a position where they could beat the Boston Celtics in a 7-game series. Like, I might give the edge to Boston. It's not so far-fetched. It's not so far-fetched that the Cavs could win that series and have a legitimate coin flip chance to do it. The other thing that Greg and I talked about that I thought was very interesting was this measuring stick idea for the West Coast. I was talking about it a little bit with Dan yesterday. It's hard to use these as a measuring stick just because the NBA regular season, it's hard to pin any game or any small stretch of game sort of this is what the team's going to be because you go through ebbs and flows, ups and downs throughout the year. On paper, it seems to be what would be the closest thing you could possibly get. Right? You're playing some superstar teams coming up in the next few days. Obviously, you take on the Nuggets tonight, but it doesn't get easy from there on out. You have some really tough games set up on the schedule if you're the Cavs where you have to go play Golden State, and then you go to LA to face the Lakers, who are obviously never a pushover. Dallas is a team who a lot of people would paint as a title contender out of the West. And then by the time you come back home, you have one game against Charlotte, and you're back up against the OKC Thunder, who are in that same conversation.
Kwame Brown.
Kwame Brown in that conversation?
I didn't mean to do that.
I can tell. It's okay. Kwame Brown is in the conversation. No, I would not consider Kwame Brown a title contender. Interestingly enough, he can't play. That's what it comes down to.
I am preparing for another segment, and I made an oopsie.
Oopsies are okay.
They happen. Low inside baseball happening here at night.
No, but like, you look at that stretch of games, I don't know how you look at it any other way that you could see this, but Greg brought up an interesting point. These teams aren't necessarily in the best spot themselves. Denver's on a downstretch where they don't look that dominant. They're in a real rough patch where teams are questioning their legitimateness. Their legitimateness? Yeah, we'll roll with it. That's a word for sure. Probably in the dictionary, right?
Legitness?
No, I think that's what the kid at the skate park says in the Vine. That's legitness.
That's legitness.
Yeah, I don't know that one's real either.
I think that's in a dictionary.
It might be.
Not the dictionary.
But it's in one of them. I can guarantee you at least one dictionary that is. You want to go Urban Dictionary. I'm sure that legitness finds its way into there.
Yeah, because anyone can edit it.
Yeah. Oh, my. No, that was... we'll roll with it that it was a word. But yeah, like Golden State going through struggles of their own. They're in a drop-off point right now. The Lakers, obviously with a 40-year-old LeBron, that team doesn't look like they're built the best. Dallas missing Luka. The list goes on and on with these teams that struggle, where a portion of the season that I was like, okay, this could be a measuring stick, it might now just be another drop in the bucket of the people arguing the Cavs have had sort of a cakewalk of a regular season. And it contributes to the idea that they're 26-4. What else are you going to go into? You only have who you have in front of you, and the Cavs have taken advantage of that. But it's hard to argue against the fact that the Cavs have also had, in the grand scheme of things, a fairly easy path 30 games into the year, and it doesn't look like it heats up all that much. 216-474-0092. If you guys want to get on that, also coming up at 9 o'clock, when we get back, get a grip, as it always is. Apparently, Dom's preparing for something. I don't know. Kwame Brown might make his way in. We'll do it next. Jake Volnick with you guys here on 92.3 The Fan.